fire rescue, EMS, law enforcement. These are the three components of public safety, and those who answer the call are the first responders. Welcome to another episode of 5 Alarm Task Force with your host, Steve Green. 5 Alarm Task Force presents some of the best instructors, leaders, and mentors in public safety today to educate, elucidate, and entertain. No topic is out of bounds, and every opinion has value. 5 Alarm Task Force is brought to you by our sponsors, Insight Fire Training, LLC, your best bet for fire service thermal imaging camera training, and by the Firehouse Tribune, where you can expand your horizons in emergency services and learn to work hard, stay safe, and live inspired. And by 5 Alarm Task Force Corp, supporting our firefighters and other first responders. Along with our promotional partners, Chief Miller Products and Sites, LifeScan Wellness Center, saving the lives of America's heroes, Nesta Bars, the amazing new hand tool for the fire service, the Firefighter Cancer Foundation, fighting to extinguish firefighter cancer since 2004, the Firefighter Cancer Support Network, the Albemarle Sweet Shop, the North Florida Fire Expo, and the Great Florida Fire School. Remember, our ultimate goal is for you to be safe and return home after every call. So insert those earphones or turn up those speakers. The 5 Alarm Task Force is being dispatched right now. Hello and welcome. I'm Steve Green, your host and the creator of 5 Alarm Task Force. It is a pleasure to be joining you now for our fifth season. Hard to believe that way back in 2016, we started this podcast on the behest of several of my good friends and mentors on social media, and it's been a great ride. And we have special things occurring this year. First, we're happy to tell you and honored to tell you that we have created a nonprofit, certified nonprofit organization, and our goal is going to be to help our fellow first responders. No, we're not making a big deal yet. We're not raising funds yet. And that's because we feel right now it's more important that money that comes in from the public goes to either providing PPE for medical staff and first responders where needed, and also to continue help feeding America for the tens of thousands who are still without work or still furloughed or been permanently laid off and have been unable to find new work in this pandemic. And so we want to make sure that they can put food on the table. There will be a time when things, that curve flattens out, as they say, and we'll be able to turn to you, our regular listeners or new listeners across the world, actually, and for your help that will allow us to help our first responders. More on that in later shows. But it is a pleasure to welcome you to this particular show. It is our kickoff episode for our fifth season. And more importantly, we are kicking off today a new segment that will be on every month on our podcast. It's called Make Do. And you'll learn all about that in a few minutes when you listen to my guest, Captain Nick Peppard and Sean Duffy. If you're looking to listen to previous episodes and you like what you're hearing, you can always go to our website at www.dalmatianproductions.tv, and on the main menu, click on the podcast tab, and that'll take you to the first page of our library of over 140 episodes since 2016. While you're on our website, on our homepage, you can very easily and simply subscribe to our newsletter. We don't send spam. We don't sell your mailing address, email address. We don't give it away. We protect it to the best that we possibly can under the law. And should you ever want to get off the list, all you have to do is send us an email at dalmatprod@outlook.com with the word unsubscribe in the subject, and you'll be taken off right away. If you look around on Facebook, you can find our page at /DalmatProdFire for now, because there'll be changes as we have our new corporation, 5 Alarm Task Force Corp. And we've changed already the name on Twitter. So you can look at 5ATF there. And we hope, though, on Facebook, you will like us and we'll continue to receive your comments and your recommendations and your thoughts and ideas and try to get back to you as often as we can. If you're listening to us on a podcast platform, most of those platforms allow you to leave a review. And it's very important both to them and to us that you leave good reviews. Why? Because when somebody else searches for us, part of the algorithm used is the good reviews. So the more good reviews you have and the more popular your podcast is, well, you're up there higher on the list when somebody's searching for you. The less you have, well, the deeper you are and the harder you are to find. So hopefully you can help us with that. And speaking of that, I'm really surprised. I just got an email yesterday from the Podcast Awards director that told us we made the final slate once again. I didn't make a big deal of it this year because I had so many problems earlier in the spring. I think I don't remember sending in the application to be listed, but somehow we made it to the final slate. And now they have over 5,000 ballots going out for voting, and the awards will be announced sometime in late September. But for all of you who did submit our podcast for consideration, I don't have the words to thank you enough for your loyalty, your dedication, and yes, your friendship as well. So thank you. And if you enjoy the show and you want to get a little piece of the show, so to speak, for now, it'll all change when we totally switch over to the new corporation, you can visit our little store with our friends from Teespring at bit.ly/Dalmat Store, capital D on Dalmat, capital S is in store, and it's one word, Dalmat Store. And there are several T-shirts there, a couple of mugs you can choose from with different verbiage on the back of several of the T-shirts. And all all the proceeds from the sale of those T-shirts will go into our foundation account, from which we're going to, with the good Lord willing, we're going to be able to help benefit our fellow first responders, especially our firefighters who are in dire straits. And we'll tell you about that whole methodology once we're ready to launch it. But you're up until now, the vast majority of the net proceeds have all gone to the National Fallen Firefighters Foundation. And we will continue, by the way, to always support the National Fallen Firefighters Foundation for all the wonderful work they do to the families and survivors of our brothers and sisters who made that ultimate sacrifice. So please keep that in mind whenever you're thinking of buying the little trinkets, the T-shirts, or the mugs. We are planning to have a whole different system, and we're going to have a store on the website where you can buy new T-shirts that are professionally done, relatively locally here, hopefully in the state of Florida, and you'll have a lot of those to choose from. And that's it, folks. That's all our business. Stay tuned. We're going to be right back with our guests, Captain Nick Peppard and Sean Duffy, as we kick off Make Do for the Suburban Firefighter right here on 5 Alarm Task Force. We'll be right back. Please stay tuned. New technology for the fire service seems to appear almost every day, and that technology demands a learning curve, especially if we're talking about thermal imaging cameras. That's where Insight Fire Training LLC is your best bet. With an excellent reputation across the U.S., Insight Fire Training will meet all your TIC training needs. Their curriculum is peer-reviewed and has been used internationally. Their instructors are Level 1 Thermography certified, and they have taught in 33 states and 4 countries. Their courses run from introductory to training the trainers. Courses are available online, for the classroom, classroom hybrid, and even live fire. Insight Training LLC is proficient in over 40 thermal imaging cameras, so you feel confident they will know your make and model. Best of all, programs are customized to your specific needs, and their cadre of fire service veterans are vetted craftsmen of Project Kill the Flashover. They are so proficient that they have trained TIC manufacturers on how to best use and sell their own product. That's Insight Fire Training LLC. Look them up on InsightTrainingLLC.com. Your best bet for TIC training. Would you like to meet up with Andy and the gang from Insight Training? Here's part of their upcoming schedule. Wheeling, West Virginia Fire Department, live fire thermal imaging training. Insight Training will be training the entire department over the course of 3 days, August 16th to 18th, on their new FLIR K65 thermal imaging cameras. This event is sponsored by Interstate Rescue. Superior Fire Department, Wisconsin. Insight Training will be offering a 3-hour webinar for each of their respective shifts beginning on August 26th from 1 to 4 p.m. Richmond Fire and Emergency Services, Virginia. Insight Training will be training the entire department over the course of 3 days, September 9th to 11th, on their new Bullard NXT thermal imaging cameras. Beaver Lane Fire and Rescue, Marshville, North Carolina. Insight Training will offer an 8-hour day of classroom and max firebox burn and learn demonstration. This event will be hosted at the Beaver Lane Fire Station on September 12th from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. International Training on Tactical Thermal Imaging sponsored by Poland CFBT. PL. Insight Training will be offering 3 days of in-depth classroom and live fire tactical thermal imaging training in Poland. This event is hosted and sponsored by CFBT.PL. Insight Training LLC, your best bet for firefighting tick training. The Firehouse Tribune, where inspiration was forged by those who came before us, opening the doors for us to build a path. A path to share our mission with the rest of the emergency service world. With a small, tight-knit team of first responders dedicated to sharing experiences and knowledge, we constantly strive to provide our followers with thought-provoking content from all aspects of emergency services and life. Our contributors speak at top fire and EMS conferences in the country. They have been guests on numerous fire service podcasts and will even come and speak at your firehouse or event. Interested? Visit their website, www.thefirehousetribune.com. And find them on Facebook using the Firehouse Tribune and on Twitter at FH Tribune and on Instagram, FH Tribune. We live by one motto, not just in emergency services, but in life as well. Excellence is a habit, not a goal. We look forward to hearing from you soon. Until next time, work hard, stay safe, and live inspired.
Welcome to Chief Miller. Chief Miller operates the largest social media page dedicated to the men and women of the fire service from around the world. Check him out on Instagram at Chief_Miller. Find him on Twitter at Chief_Miller. And check out the website where you can find Chief Miller Apparel at ChiefMillerApparel.com.
Hello and welcome to this very special edition of 5 Alum Task Force. We're happy to announce this podcast is our first in our fifth season of producing 5 Alum Task Force. Never thought we'd get this far or beyond this long, but we're happy we're here. And we're starting off this new season with a big announcement that we're very proud of, and that is, along with good friends and terrific firefighters, Captain Nick Papard and Sean Duffy, we are bringing you once a month a new segment, a new feature called Make Do. And to tell you about it, I'm going to introduce my first guest. He's become a close friend. He's one of those guys that, as a firefighter, you'd say, I'd follow this guy into hell and back if I had to, because you know he's got your butt. So my first guest is Captain Nick Papard. Nick, great to have you and Sean with us this morning. Let's go. Let's tell our folks about it and how it happened and where we're going.
It's good to be here, Steve. Excited to kick off our first episode here. Finally, we've been talking about it for a few months. So, kind of the why behind Make Do, where it came from, the concept. Basically, you know, we started having a conversation a few months back after a conference, rather, about just some of the issues that face what I call the other guys. Approximately out of 11, you know, or 1.1 million firefighters in the United States, you know, most of us fall in the category of non-urban, and that is the suburban or rural environment.
Sure.
In fact, only 97,000 firefighters out of that 1.1 million firefighters in the U.S. are actually urban firemen that protect populations of over 250,000.
Wow.
So the rest fall in the category of the suburban in the rural setting. And that's kind of what we're targeting here. We're going for that. You know, the focus here is we get a lot of good information across the country from a lot of great urban firemen. And you know, you go to conferences and you hear some really, really jam up guys that know their stuff. They're really, really good at what they do. But what we have found, and what I've found, is a lot of guys fall in that other category where maybe they don't have 50 guys on the first box in the first 10 minutes. They don't have, you know, dedicated truck companies. Maybe they're running Quints, or maybe they don't have a ladder at all. They don't have response times that are 4 or 5 minutes or less, you know, all the time. I mean, and so what ends up happening is, you know, there's a little bit of disconnect sometimes in trying to prioritize tactics and trying to have to really make do on the fire ground with limited resources. So that's kind of where the name came from. The Make Do Suburban Fireman podcast series is really just taking tactics and common fire ground issues and fire service issues and examining them through the lens of the suburban setting and the challenges that come with that setting. So that's where it came from. I'm excited about it. I think it's, you know, it really appeals to a large portion of the fire service where the rest, like I said, the rest of us kind of fit in. I know Sean and I've had several conversations, you and I've had several conversations, Steve, about the need for something like this series. But there's a lot of data that supports the direction we're going and the crowd that we're aiming for. So that being said, a little bit about me for those that don't know me. I got 15 years career fireman. I worked in a little bit of all settings. I've been fortunate to work in small, medium, and large departments. I worked about 5.5 years in Tallahassee, about 300,000 people in that response district, 16 stations. Leans towards the urban setting, but a lot of suburban areas on the outskirts of the city and in the county that were, you know, not in the urban setting. And then Hillsborough County, worked there for a little bit. Obviously, a larger metro department, 44 stations, about 1,100 guys. And so I got a little bit of that experience, but I moved back home. I started out up here in the Panhandle of Florida and started having kids and family stuff. And as the good Lord would see fit, we ended up making the move back up here a few years ago. So I've been back up here in the Panhandle since the beginning of 2017. I work for the Holland Bar Fire District in Santa Rosa County, Florida, Special Fire District. We cover 50 square miles, and it's mostly suburban setting on the beach. Currently serve as captain on Engine 41 on the district's west side. I do a little bit of teaching on the side. It's kind of where most of us have met. Get around to some of the fire conferences, teach locally, you know, not just conference stuff, but, you know, the FO1 series, pump operator, that kind of stuff. Work part-time, lifeguard ambulance. I'm a field training officer with the EMS service here on part-time status. Teach at the local fire academy up here in Niceville. I am the owner operator of North Florida Fire and EMS training. Kind of started something new last year with the North Florida Fire Expo, and kind of spearheaded that with my good buddy Mike, and we kind of just been growing the teaching stuff and trying to, you know, share our passion and what we do with other like-minded individuals. And that's where Sean and I met. That's where you and I met, is down in Fort Myers. So, yeah, just trying to share the love for the fire service. And, you know, that's kind of what brought us here to this podcast, is, you know, just a couple guys wanting to talk about fireman stuff and kind of talk about what's near and dear to us and kind of what we know. And with that, Sean, if you want to jump in, give us a little bit about yourself and your thoughts on the podcast, man. I'll let you take it from here, man.
Yeah, for sure. Appreciate that. Thank you, Nick. For you that don't know, my name is Sean Duffy, co-founder of Build Your Culture. I have been in the fire service for 15 years now, and much like Nick, I started as in a small volunteer area and just kind of progressed. I've had the opportunity to work in large counties, small cities, kind of all around. But the one thing that I've always somewhat have experienced throughout my career is the strain that we as firefighters face with staffing levels. You know, it's hard these days because the fire service is on a decline as far as people wanting to come in, as far as volunteers, you know, getting all those things. So we've had to learn to adapt to that situation and experience how to do the job with the tools that we have. So currently I work for the city of Venice here in Southwest Florida. It's a small city. It's three stations, about 16 square miles. We cover beach. We cover like a downtown area. So we have a little bit of both. But the thing that we still experience, even with being a city department, is, you know, that word city kind of sounds big, and everybody assumes that you just have the staffing levels that you need, and that's just not true. You will run an engine company with three guys on it, you know, or sometimes two, depending on what our staffing level is. So when you're looking at a population of about 23,000 people, although it's not terribly huge, the one unique factor that we have is that we are retirement communities. So during certain parts of the year, our actual population doubles or triples. Your call volume goes up, and you're still expected to show up and handle that with the two guys or three guys that you have on the fire engine. So over time, you know, talking to Nick and other people who are experiencing these same things, I think that we just kind of got used to, hey, that's just the way it is. And that's unfortunate, because a lot of times that can lead us down a path of excuses. And what I mean by that is, well, we just didn't have enough people, so we couldn't do all these things. And we very much can do all the things that we said we were going to do, but that leads us to a training. And I think that this is where we have to talk about those things, is how are we overcoming these situations that we face? You know, some of us have great equipment, but we don't have the people. Some of us have budget issues. You know, how do we show up and give the assignments effectively that need to happen with the manpower we have? Sometimes you might have to do two or three different jobs in a quick order. So, you know, all those things come into play: call volume, pay, all of it. So I think that's what we're looking forward to kind of diving into throughout this series, is what we are doing in our areas, what other firemen in the state or around the country are doing in their areas with what we're faced with today. So that's pretty much where I stand on the issue and why I'm so excited to do this podcast.
Well, Nick, when you first brought it to me, I told you right away that I really loved the idea, because in my two volunteer departments, that was the way of life, as both of you have alluded to, that when you're in a volunteer department, even if you have a 24-hour caretaker who's that first driver to get the first apparatus out, there were plenty of times, especially in the one in North Carolina, but we were right outside the city. We weren't just in the middle of a rural area. We were just off the city boundary. And as a matter of fact, when I first got there, we were contracted for 5 square miles of the city, because they didn't have a station, I think it was 5 square miles, close enough that so they asked us to respond to it. But sometimes, you know, daytime wasn't bad, but nighttime, there were times that we'd get a call, you know, 1 o'clock in the morning, and be the driver waiting for an officer. But my buddy and I, we both lived very close, so we were there quickly. And finally, the driver just said, okay, one of you jump up front. We got to go. We got to get to this call. And it was a smoke showing, or they received 3 calls already on the active fire. We just don't have the time to wait for that fourth person. You got to go. And luckily, almost every time that happened with me, I was riding with my buddy. So we already kind of knew. We had already laid out our plans thanks to the mentors, a couple of the guys from the department who were drivers, who kind of guided us as we were coming up. And thanks to them, they would say, okay, this one, you go in the front seat, and the other one say, next time, you know, you'll go in. But my buddy and I already knew what we had to do to get things started before the next apparatus would show up. So that's why I agreed so quickly. I think it is a great idea. I think reading the trades as I do, and reading online as much as I do online, we don't see this really addressed. There's a lot of tactics and videos and things like that, but the issue is we don't see it as articles, or we don't see it as videos of what about this issue that 80% of us, as you said, Nick, as you opened, we can't expect 12 people on 5 pieces of apparatus to show up on the first alarm assignment without even smoke showing. They're just there. We don't have that luxury. So I think you guys came up with a terrific idea. You've researched it. Tell us about what we're looking to do in the months ahead, because this we're going to present this segment once a month, not always on the same date. So we'll always promote on social media to keep you apprised, or to our listeners, keep them apprised of when the next episode's coming in and who the guests are going to be. We have some good guests already lined up, and some we're still waiting to hear back from. But let's explain to them some of the segments and what you're looking to accomplish as we come down the road in bits and pieces rather than the whole pie now. Let's divide it up and share some with the listeners, please.
Well, sure. You know, it really just comes down to, you know, we want to take and talk about going forward. Today's kind of an introduction, a generalized, broad brush view of what we're doing. But our goal is to bring different speakers in that are, you know, what we consider kind of the leading guys in their respective rights and fields. But what we want to do is we want to bring in guys particularly that have experience in the suburban setting more often than not. We want to talk about equipment. We want to talk about resources. We want to talk tactics, you know, leadership, things like that. But we want to do it from the perspective of what it's like being in that small department that's got two or three stations, four stations, whatever, and really address the challenges that we face in that environment with those individuals. And you know, my thought on it, and I think we all kind of feel the same way, is kind of that kitchen table conversation, right? So we're sitting here, we're doing a podcast, but we're bringing these guests in, like, come sit at our virtual table. And let's just have a conversation. Let's talk about what they've seen that works for them, you know, what we've seen that works for us, sharing ideas, you know, maybe a little good-hearted humor here and there. We got to bust our chops. We got to bust each other's chops a little bit.
Absolutely.
Keep it light. But you know, I think that's the goal. It's not a, you know, the goal is to share the passion, to share some knowledge, some ideas. You know, I consider myself a jack of all trades, you know, by default. I kind of think that's where the suburban fire service ends up being, is because I'm on an engine company, but I may show up and have to do truck work. You know, I've gone to fires where I'm showing up, I'm the third new engine, and I'm assigned vertical ventilation, or you're assigned search, or whatever the case may be, traditional, what we call truck work. In the suburban environment, you have to be able to kind of do it all. Because you don't have a lot of times the specialized resources, or they're too far out to, you know, you may be, you know, getting an aerial, you know, 15 minutes in that's fifth due. And that's very common in the suburban environment. And so that's kind of what the goal is to, let's talk about making it work with the resources that we have and sharing those things that work for us. Because what I think happens is, guys, you go to these conferences and you share stories with our urban counterparts, and they're really, really good at what they do. They're, you know, the guy that's can man, he's been riding that can man position for the last 3 years, and he's really, really good with that water can. And the guy that's the irons guy, he's really, really good at taking doors. And so there's a lot of really great knowledge you glean from that. But in the suburban environment, a lot of times we have to be able to shift gears. So you may start out doing engine work, you may run over here, and your next air cylinder, you're doing truck work, you know, and so there's a very unique environment in that, you know, in what the environment that we work in is unique in the sense of, you know, we don't have necessarily guys that can just specialize in one thing. So what we like to, you know, kind of push, and what I like to, you know, push guys to do is be really kind of well versed in everything, but then find one or two things that they're really passionate about and be really, really, really good at that. Right. And so that's kind of what we're trying to do, is we're trying to find guys that in the suburban environment that have had success, that maybe they found that niche that they're really, really, really good at, you know, whether it's, you know, engine company work, you know, fire attack, tactics, ventilation, search, things like that, and break it down and say, okay, you know, you don't have a 5-man truck company showing up to do search. You got two guys on an engine. How are you going to make it work? So that's kind of just a little taste of kind of what we're looking to do. You know, Sean, feel free to jump in on that and kind of expand on that. But that's from our initial conversations, that's kind of what I've gathered. That's kind of been the vision I feel like we've all shared. And hopefully guys get a lot out of it.
Well, let me just add one point, and that is that not only do I know these gentlemen through, they've both been guests on the show before, but we met at the last Great Florida Fire School. And I've had the opportunity, as I work at the school, besides teaching, I also do video and photos. And I've had the opportunity of watching them both work. I see their class, and then I see them outside doing the stuff. I see last year, I remember Sean taking the doors and working on those. And then we had the burns and the entry, and Nick with your teaching. And so, again, one of the reasons why I was so confident that this would work is because I've seen the two of you teach. I've seen the two of you work with your class. And the difference is that I love is to see that you guys are not just lecturers. You don't just get up there and lecture and say, okay, now you're going to have to go learn how to do it some way. And, hope you have a good teacher. No, you guys are there in the room, and then you take them out and you do the work with them. And so you show them you share with them your knowledge and your experience and the wisdom that you've accrued in your 15 years on there. Sean, let's jump back over to you, please.
Sure. Well, I appreciate those kind words, Steve. I really do. And the one thing I'll say about it is I'm a firm believer in that knowledge is theory until proven otherwise. Any of us have the capability to sit here and have a conversation and make things sound great, but it comes to application, and not just application on the drill grounds, but application on the fire ground or any other of the emergency scenes that we face, right? So that's where really, truly being a student of your craft is so important here, in my opinion, because you have to be able to show up and insert yourself where needed, when needed. And if you are really only focused on one thing, because that's the only position that you've ever been given, or you haven't taken the time to learn other things, then when time comes, you're not as effective as it can be. And one of my biggest pet peeves, I think, is, you know, when you ask somebody who's teaching or giving you knowledge what their experience level is, a lot of times you just get regurgitated information that they may have taken from a class before. But we need to be talking about real world application, how that stuff affects us, right? Because, you know, like Nick said, we can go to a fire conference and we can learn something. And that's great. And it's all good knowledge. But is it applicable to you? How can you show up on that same scene and utilize that? Because this person that taught you that, one, may have never really had true amount of time to figure out what really works and what doesn't. Mm-hmm. Or it may work for them because they have 16 or 17 people showing up immediately, where you might have four or five on a good day, depending on where you work. So I think we just need to shift the focus into this thing of, hey, we're better together, right? All of us have to learn how to do these same things, because when the public calls, they have a certain level of expectation. They don't care what year your fire engine is. They don't care that you couldn't buy new nozzles and you haven't bought new nozzles in years. They don't care that, you know, you're making $10 an hour and you only have two guys on a fire engine. What they care about is, I have an emergency and you guys are the professionals, whether it be career, volunteer, paid on call, whatever it is, you're still a firefighter. And you took that oath that you would show up and you would mitigate their emergency, whatever that is. And they believe that. So when we show up and we're not doing the things we said we were going to do, and our default is to fall back on, well, what else did you want me to do? What I want you to do is, I want you to understand what your job is. Well, let's start there, right? And your job is to show up, formulate a plan, get into action quickly, and start making the situation better. Obviously, we all have limitations, and we're not going to be able to do everything at the same time. However, understanding what needs to happen first in relation to the size of the crew that you have available to you can make or break your success. So one of the things that I have seen, which drives me absolutely nuts, is it's no secret that at least here in my area of Florida, almost every single fire department transports. Okay, we are a fire-based EMS system.
Right.
And we'll give our firefighters bunker gear, and we'll give them air packs, and we'll put them on those ambulances, and we want them to run medical calls, which is fine. Okay, that is a service we provide. But when it comes to the fire scene, we kind of tend to push those guys out of the way and say, well, you're either rehab for us, or you're RIT, or whatever. And we're worrying about things that really haven't even happened yet. And what we've done is, not to say that none of those things are important, but what is important right now? I have two people that are fully capable of showing up to this emergency and getting it to action. So you don't have a truck company? Fine. You have an ambulance that just showed up with two people and there's ladders on the fire engine. Assign them to the roof. They could take the tools they need and go do truck work. Okay. You want to go fire attack and you only got two guys on your engine and you're stretching line? Great. You just had two guys that showed up that can be your search crew. And you're worried about putting them somewhere else where they're out of play. And I think that's where we need to focus on how efficient are we being with the options we have. And, you know, we live in a world of mutual aid. It is okay to say you need help. We got to swallow our pride and stop saying, like, this is a fire in my city and nobody else is putting it out. Or this is my first due and second due is not coming to do anything. All of that stuff is great for, like, friendly competition. It's not so great when we allow it to affect our performance. So understand, if I only have four people, fire attack has to happen, a search has to happen, and all these other things still have to happen. So as people start showing up, whether it be mutual aid or you know, members from further down the line, they need to be plug and play. And the only way to be plug and play is to know what your job is and to be a student of that craft and to understand and have the ability to show up and go, all right, so I've got these three things done. Most likely what needs to be done next is this, and then get to work, you know? So it's very easy for command to get sidetracked. They got a lot of things going on. And I don't mean that in a negative way, right. But when you're looking at it of, hey, I've got all these people that I've got to keep track of who's still coming, who's not here, what assignments I need, who's doing what already. It takes that really good firefighter that knows their job to maybe just give that cue of, hey, chief, or, you know, maybe it's a captain, whoever's in charge. Hey, this isn't done yet. Would you like us to do it? And that's where that team dynamic comes in. And that's why we need to get better at understanding our order of assignments and things like that, especially in that suburban setting. Because if we look at life inside structures, Firefighter Rescue Survey does tremendous work, and they have a lot of these statistics. And one of those statistics is that roughly about 60% of time within the first 4 minutes of us showing up on scene, that's 60% of our victim survivability rate. So what that means for us is we have 4 minutes from when we show up, pull that air brake to really formulate a plan, get our 360, do all that stuff, and then get inside there, find them and remove them, right? The longer we wait to do those things, the less chance of survival they have. So it's important that, you know, we get that walker on the fire quick. We're proficient at stretch and line. It's important that we go find those victims quick, that we know how to search. And we just can't be using excuses anymore. And that's just my personal opinion about pretty much the whole thing of what we're facing.
Right. Well, you brought up a very important point when you talked about mutual aid. I'm going to recommend to our listeners that if you don't already subscribe to Chief Billy Goldfeder's The Secret List, you need to. And you also need to visit his site, Firefighter Close Calls, because one of the things that Chief Goldfeder is very, very vocal about is the importance of mutual aid long before you ever need it. That you should be setting these mutual aid packs up, you know, before you ever have the fire you need to call it. And the personalities have to be pushed out of the way. And we have to remember, as you said, and Nick, and you've alluded to as well, that the most important thing that we have to do is take care of that emergency. And if you know that you're for example, let's say you're in a small combo department, and you're getting, you know, your dispatch says we have multiple calls for a working fire at this address, then whoever's going to jumps in the right seat of that first apparatus, and he knows he only has four people right now, should activate the mutual aid because they know they have a working fire and have them on there. You can always turn people back, and that still means you can still shake hands with them at a later date. But if you need them, you want those hands next to you as soon as you need them and put them into a job. So I think that that's a vital point, and maybe that's something that, you know, we can look for a guest to address that. Maybe we can ask, you know, Chief Goldfeder himself to invite him to be one of the guests on Make Do to address that very issue, because he's very vocal about it, a great supporter of a preset, predetermined mutual aid where it's going to be needed. Because you guys have both, you've both been on on volunteer and career departments. I've been on career and volunteer and combo departments. And we, as I said at the opening, we still today, you know, I'm out longer than you guys have been in because of the injury, but things don't really change. We still have fires. We still have rescues. We still have pin-ins. We still have trench collapse. We still have all of this today that we had back in my day. But we have to be ready and say, gee, I wonder what we're going to do if that happens to us. Let's say we're reading it in Firehouse Magazine. What are we going to do? Well, I guess we'll see when it happens. You can't do that. Nick, go ahead. I see you there looking at me and you're taking notes. Go ahead.
Yeah, I'm just jotting a couple things down, Steve. To both of your points, and this is something I preach to my guys, because in the suburban environment, you know, we don't have all the, you know, resources that we necessarily need. We have challenges that we have to overcome. And so what I always tell my guys is, you know, being in this environment is, for several reasons, we have to train more. We have to train more because we don't have the resources. You can't hide behind the numbers. You know, in a big department, sometimes it's easy for guys to kind of just get by and not be really great at what they're doing because they can hide in numbers. And I've seen it. I've seen guys that, you know, you think, oh, and I think there's there's an illusion that if you're in this massive department that you're at a busy station or that you're in the urban setting. And that's simply not true. There are a lot of big departments that have rural areas, that have, you know, suburban areas, that have slow stations. You know, not every firehouse is going to fires, you know, in these big cities is going to fires every shift. And so there's an illusion there. I think sometimes we think that, you know, oh, they work in the big city. Well, you know, are they in that station that's going to fires every shift? Or are they kind of in an outline station that maybe runs 4 or 5 calls and, you know, and doesn't go to as much work? So, you know, there, you can't get, you know, I think caught up in size, you know, strictly numbers. But being in the suburban environment, you know, I tell guys and I tell my crew this, you have to be a jack of all trades. You have to train more because we're not necessarily getting the firework that, you know, someone like, you know, Baltimore City, you know, Engine 8's going to or whatever. You know, we're not going to fires 2 or 3 times a shift like some of these guys in Detroit are going to, right? So because maybe we don't get as many chances to really test our mettle and test our skills, it's important that we make up that gap by doing more training and by really honing our skills and our craft and, you know, listening to podcasts and reading trade journals and going to conferences and talking to guys that you know, share knowledge and challenge us to be better, right? So that's one way, you know, one reason why we got to make, you know, extra training a priority. But also, I mean, it's just a simple fact that, you know, I can't really focus in on just truck work or just engine work or whatever because I have to be able to do it all. So it does require a mindset, you know, in the suburban environment. We have to think that, you know, I know guys that, oh, you know, we're in a small department. I don't go to fires like those guys in the big city. So, you know, I don't have to train as much or I don't, you know, whatever. And I argue it's actually the opposite, that you need to train more and you need to do more. I tell guys this all the time. You really, in a smaller department, in a suburban setting, what we need is force multipliers. You know, Sean was talking about the ambulance guys, you know, right? Oh, just put them over there in rehab. Well, no, they're skilled firemen. Right. Put them to work. You know, we got to use our numbers to what we do have to the max. And you can't hide behind the numbers. You have to be a force multiplier and be able to, you know, a lot of times go 2, 3, 4 air cylinders in a row without a break or a very short break because you just don't have the resources to trade out. So you may have to shift gears from, I think Sean and I were talking about a fire he went to where he's shifting gears from RIT to search and, you know, and having it on the fly kind of change gears and be able to be effective and get the job done. And so for me, you know, this is my setting. The suburban fire service is where I've cut my teeth most of my career. I've seen both sides, but I think that it's inspiring to see other guys and share that information. And that's it. That's it. You know, Sean, you know, yourself, me, guys that we're bringing in, you know, listen, I'm a normal guy. I put my pants on the same way as everybody else. I'm still riding the truck. I'm still doing the job. I don't have all the answers, but you know what? Maybe by having conversations like we're having right now, by bringing guys in that maybe have some experiences that we don't have and sharing that information around the virtual kitchen table, we can glean information that's going to make us all, you know, it's going to make us better. It's going to make the listeners better. And even if you can just take one or two nuggets from every episode, right? You take that little bit of information and say, hey, you know what? That works for those guys. Maybe it can work for me too. You know, and that's really, I think, really the key point here is find those issues and identify them now, right? Anticipate those issues now. If you know you have staffing issues, resource issues, water supply issues, if you know that you're like 62% of the fire service that does EMS, nationwide, 62% of the fire service in the United States does EMS. So you know that you have those guys on that rescue unit or that ambulance, right? If they're certified guys, put them to work. Use those numbers to your advantage and anticipate those needs early. Call for resources early, right? Yep. Don't wait until you're behind the eight ball. And I think that's the key to this is, you know, this whole thing is like, let's identify those deficiencies and those weaknesses. And let's find creative ways to kind of get ahead of the curve and kind of line, you know, the odds, you know, stack the odds in our favor, if you will, as suburban firemen, so that we're not playing catch up every incident, you know, every time we get a fire.
Right.
Sure. Nick, I'll just add to that real quick. It's great because we all know that one of the biggest like things we sell ourselves and one of our biggest failures comes from those words of, well, that's just how it's always been. Right. So I think we need to learn how to open ourselves up better to criticism. Every time you go somewhere is a learning experience. You know, every time you maybe go to a medical call and it happens to be in a high rise, that's your opportunity to go, okay, cool. So I'm here for this, but on my way up, where are my FDCs? Where are the standpipe connections? Like how is this set up? If I was coming up this stairwell, how am I going to lay out my line for a fire down this hallway or something like that? Right. Like we could be doing all that size up stuff before the incident even happens. And how often are we just focused on one task and we're just like, yep. All right, somebody called for tow pain. We're going to go in here. We're going to see what's going on. We're probably just going to pick them off the ground. We're going to leave. Well, we get so involved in our conversation from the time that we park that truck to the time we get to that apartment building or whatever it is, that we're missing all that opportunity that we have to gain more knowledge about our first two areas and how we're going to be efficient with the manpower we have. Because you can take all of that, go back to the firehouse, sit down, say, hey, guys, like, before we get any further, like we just had this medical call, like whatever. Did anybody notice where our standpipes were on this? Did anybody notice the layout of the stairs? How many feet of fire hose do we have? So if we had a fire on this floor and we're three apartments down, what's the stretch? If we only have 200 feet, how short are we? Like these are all conversations that we could be having to prep for those things, right? So that leads me to the other thing that I hear a lot, which drives me absolutely bonkers, is what's the plan? Well, it hasn't happened. We'll just figure it out when we get there. No. We're not going to figure it out when we get there. That's how you fail, right? We need to figure it out right now and have a solid game plan and not only talk about it, but let's get out there and let's train on it. So that way I could put what we've talked about in with skills, with mesh them together. So when that call happens, it's not if, it's when, we're all automatically, hey. And it's not going to always go the way we envisioned it. That's just life, you know. But the point is you prepared yourself to a certain degree that you can at least be ahead of the game. And when you go back to the firehouse, you're like, man, I messed up stretch up. It didn't really go as well as I planned. But guess what you just did? One, you just gained experience. Two, you now have the knowledge that you need to implement into your next training with that scenario and continuously build on it. That's all it is, you know. When we talk about children, we always give them these sensory tools, right?
For sure.
We buy them like stuff like Legos or Lincoln Logs or anything because we want them to figure out how to put the pieces of things together. And, you know, over time, by doing that, they build these amazing things. We need to take that same principle and relate it to us. Like, we're really children. We're grown men and women with a children's mindset of, hey, there's always things I have to learn, right? Always. So if we take those things and we build upon them every single time, then imagine how great of a fire service or that we could build, or even the service that we provide. You know, I'm not saying it's bad, but it could always be better.
Sure.
And that's where we need to look at ourselves openly in the fire service and stop looking at everything as a personal attack. You know, when we say, man, that sucked. we didn't do good. There's always that one person that's like, what do you mean the fire went out? Or what do you mean they didn't die on the way to the hospital? Yeah, but it wasn't good enough for my expectations. And if we could take what we know, we always chase perfection, knowing that it doesn't exist, we're never going to get there, then what we're going to do is we're going to fall somewhere upon the excellence. And that is really the goal. And we can't help, you know, that people leave our department for pay. We can't help that, you know, we only ride two guys to an apparatus. We can't help that we might be on a volunteer or paid on-call department, and you might be sitting there ready to roll, and you have to run that call by yourself. Those things we cannot help. But it's in the preparation that we succeed. And if we're not opening ourselves up and looking at, hey, where can I do better? How can I do these things, you know, given all these situations that I'm faced with? If you're not doing those things, then you have really nobody but yourself to blame for the reason why the level of service you provide is what it is. So that's it. We have to start like breaking apart and pulling off the band-aids of these things that might sting a little and realize we're not as good as we may think, and that's okay, but we need people like, you know, Chief Isaacson or, you know, Joe DeVito or, you know, Andy Starnes, like all those people have an incredible amount of knowledge, and they're all well-versed in this same setting that we face. We need to be able to look at them for that advice and come back and humble ourselves and say, hey, listen, let's just try this. What's the worst thing that happens? It doesn't work for us? Okay, fine. Then we find a different way. But we have to at least start somewhere, and we have to try and make it work. And if we're not going to do those things, then why are we even showing up?
Right. That's a great point.
I was going to say, we, you know, two things. Firemen are really, really, really quick and good at like criticizing our fellow comrades. You know, oh, you know, watch a video on YouTube, and you can put a video of a fire up on YouTube and sit around the kitchen table, and there will be so much rhetoric that comes out of it. Why did they do that? Well, that's dumb or whatever. You know, we're very quick to do that, but we're not so quick to listen to other people critiquing us, and we're really sometimes not very good at critiquing ourselves and, you know, and being honest with ourselves. I think sometimes we overestimate our capabilities, and really the bottom line is the fire ground is the crucible where, you know, all that talk is just talk. You're gonna you know, put up or shut up, because at the end of the day, you know, if you're not ready, you're gonna be humbled on the fire ground. And you know, that's that's one thing I was thinking while Sean was talking. And the other is, if you know you're short staffed and you know you don't have resources, and you've got to adjust your plan accordingly. You can't sit there and make a you know, I've seen chiefs do this through my career, where they make this great SOP that is like best case scenario, with like they got it, they stole it from their buddy that works, you know, in the big department, you know, down the road, and they steal this SOP and they tweak a couple things, they throw it on, you know, in the book. And what happens is, it's just not realistic. It's not realistic, you know, based on their staffing model and on their operations. And what ends up happening is it falls short. And you guys have probably seen this as well, where guys will take an idea, if they go to a conference or they go, you know, they go hear someone speak and they take, you know, their ideas or the policy or whatever, and they bring it back and they try to fit that square peg in the round hole. And what they fail to realize is, it's, you know, they blame the idea, you know, that it was a bad idea, or we just don't have the staff. I've literally heard that, you know, we can't do that tech. We can't do VES. We don't have the staffing for Venet or search. Well, maybe, it, you know, we don't have the staffing. Maybe we don't have the resources. But does that mean you toss the tactic out? No, it just, you may have to modify how and when you implement that tactic, right? So that's what this whole, you know, the vision behind this podcast is. Let's talk about those things. Let's talk about, hey, you know what? I went, because I've done this. I've gone, you know, you go to a conference and you got this great tactic or this new technique you want to try. And then you get out there in your department and you realize maybe, you know, the training level's not where it needs to be for it to work successfully, or guys are, you know, reluctant because it's something new, or, you know, you try it out and it doesn't go the way you did it in the training, because you have half the manpower. And so what I've found is, bring that stuff back. It's good information, right? Bring that stuff back, but then figure out, based on your department, plan, get ahead, anticipate, you know, don't wait till the emergency happens to figure it out. Get out there and actually figure out, how can I make this tactic work in my setting with my resources, with my personnel. And, you know, and that's how we build success. It's that whole, like Sean was talking about the Legos, right? One on the other. You've got to build a little here, a little there. And just because it doesn't work as is doesn't mean it can't work all together. And that's where I think we're quick to throw and criticize guys when they fail. You know, they try something different and they fail. We're quick to, see, I told you that wasn't going to work. Well, why? What do we do, right? We say it didn't work, it's garbage, throw it out. But what do we really come back and actually evaluate why it didn't work? Why didn't it work? And start really doing an honest evaluation of ourselves and saying, was it lack of skill on my part? Was it the lack of preparation? Or was it, you know, I just didn't have the manpower at the time to implement said tactic, right? Or maybe I need to take that tactic and modify it just a little bit to make it work for me. And we don't, I think we got to do our diligence as a fire service, and specifically guys that are in limited resource situations, to give themselves the best chance to win, give themselves the best chance to succeed. Because like you said, you don't get to dictate staffing. You know, Steve, Sean, you guys, you know, in your department's experience, I mean, are you the guys writing the checks and deciding how much funding you have and how many resources? We're not, right? We're the end users, right? We're the end users of whatever they give us. And I've had guys, you know, jump up and down, you know, stuff like nozzles, right? Ah, they need to buy this nozzle, that nozzle. But at the end of the day, you got to know how to work with what you have, because you're not the one making those purchases. What, you know, would I love, you know, everybody to have my favorite brand of nozzle and type of nozzle and hose and all that stuff? That's great. You know, we preach, you know, sit there and talk to the chiefs. Like, hey, chief, we'd like to get this, this, and this. Well, guess what? Ultimately, they may say, Nick, that's a great idea, but we just don't have the money for it. So what am I going to do? I got two things I can do. I can make an excuse for why I didn't succeed, or I can learn to work to the best of my abilities within the confines of what I do have.
Exactly.
And that's you know, where I think that we as a service have got to do better is, you've got to make the best out of what you have. And that's what this podcast is for, right? To bring out those best practices, those best ideas, and to address those challenges. For the guy that's sitting here listening to this right now saying, man, I can't do that. I only got two guys in an engine, man. And, you know, my hydrants are 800 feet apart or 1,000 feet, or, you know, we got tankers or this. What I would encourage anybody listening to this podcast is, you know, work the process. You know, figure it out. Figure out how can you make it work to the best of your ability with what you do have. You can't count on what you don't have. You're not making the checks. You're not the politicians that are giving funding to the departments and stuff like that. So what are you going to do? What's your plan with what you have?
Okay. Good. You know, it's a great point to bring. And what we're going to do is we're going to take a quick break here. When we come back, we're going to talk a little bit about some of the topics we've planned on our calendar coming up. We don't have all the guests lined up, but we could talk about a few of the guests who we have booked already. You can explain why you've been so selective in the guests. And I think you mentioned it at the beginning, Nick, that we wanted to make this like the table, kitchen table, but since we need a big, wide virtual table, and thankfully Zoom gives us that and podcasts give us that ability to talk with other people, no matter where they may be in the nation, to learn with them as well. So when we come back, we'll talk about some of our topics we're going to cover, some of the guests we're going to have, and we'll learn more as we talk about Make Do, a special episode coming up this year on Season 5 of 5 Alarm Task Force. We'll be right back, folks. As always, please stay tuned.
You're listening to 5 Alarm Task Force.
The tone sounds and the dispatcher announces, stations 14 and 16, working residential structure. And that was all you needed to hear. You jump up from your chair, head to the engine, and climb into the jump seat. As the cue screams, you take stock of your PPE. Bunker pants, check. Turnout coat, check. Hood, check. Gloves, check. Escape line, check. SCBA strapped on, you're ready. Upon arrival, you jump off the apparatus, grab the loops of the Red Cross lay, and head for the open front door, where smoke is pouring out. You make sure your buddy is behind you. Crouch low and make your way inside, your trusty SCBA mask hanging on your tool belt. What? Stop everything. What the hell are you thinking? You see, it's a working room and contents fire, and the smoke is banking down almost to the floor. Who do you think you are, Superman? One breath of that crap in the smoke will damage you in some way, guaranteed. All the soot, carbon, carcinogens, and other outgassing materials will enter your body through the pores on your unprotected face. Don't be the domino, the first person down, that forces everyone else to change their tasks to take care of you. Always remember, face peace on. You have comrades depending on you and a family to go to. Face peace on.
You show up for your shift, but you're not feeling 100%. You greet your colleagues with a smile, but just can't put your finger on it. I'll shake it off in an hour, you think to yourself. You take a couple of nothing runs, but you're still not feeling any better when you get back to the barn. You throw some cold water on your face and think, yeah, that's more like it. And you head back to the day room. With training scheduled for after lunch, you make yourself comfortable in one of the recliners, but as you sit there, you feel ill. You start to sweat, and you feel nauseous. There's a pain in your left arm that you've never had before. Hey guys, you call out. I'm not feeling well. And your voice trails, your eyes close, and the darkness surrounds you. More firefighters die from cardiovascular health issues than any other reason. Don't let self-pride get in the way of taking care of yourself. See your doctor on a regular basis, and be sure to advise him or her that you're a firefighter. Don't be a statistic. Be a healthy firefighter with a long career. For more information, visit the IAFF, NVFC, or IAFC SHS websites.
It just slows me down.
It's too hard to do it and put my gear on.
I'm not comfortable.
I'm a big guy, I can't do it.
I'm just not comfortable wearing it.
You gotta be kidding me. Real firefighters don't need them.
Come on, there's no way I can wear my SCBA and my seatbelt at the same time.
Yes, we've heard all the excuses, but we can think of at least one good reason why you should buckle up. Can't you? Be a hero to those who mean the most to you. Buckle up. A message from the National Fallen Firefighters Foundation.
And welcome back to this episode of Five Alarm Task Force. I'm your host, Steve Green. And my guests today are Captain Nick Peppard and Sean Duffy. And they have created and put together a new segment that we're going to feature on Five Alarm Task Force here as we start our fifth season. Once a month, they'll be bringing on a guest to talk about a specific topic. And as a matter of fact, I'm going to do this. If you're listening to this intro of Make Do, and there's a topic you'd like us to try to cover, send us an email to Nick. What's the email they can use for you?
You can just send it to mine is NoFlow, so NoFlo, so NoFlow Fire and EMS Training at gmail.com.
Okay, NoFlow. Fire and EMS Training at gmail.com. If you don't get it from the audio, no worries. I'll have it here in the office, and you can reach me at the regular email, dalmatprod@outlook.com, and I'll make sure it gets over to Nick and Sean. So now that we're back, and now we're looking towards the future, we've created a wonderful foundation, experiences that all three of us have seen. We're not just talking out of our behind. We've all seen these kind of incidents happen in our experience. So where are we going? What is your aim now as we start next month with our first guest, first topic, and let's go down, you know, for what we have at least talked about and planned coming up on Make Do.
All right, Sean.
All right. So in September, we're going to have Captain Joe DeVito from Fort Myers Beach. He's going to be discussing his views on tick, thermal imaging, and size up clues using that thermal imager. And why I feel that's important and we need to have him is not only has he been a mentor to me over the past couple of years, but in the fire service, I personally feel, and I know Joey and you know Chief Starnes feel the same way, is often we're told turn a thing on, point and look. And that's pretty much where the training ends. So if we're trying to get better, not only for firefighter safety, but also sizing up our fires from the exterior or even, you know, situational awareness on the interior. There's a lot that we're not taught that we learn from every fire that we go to or from other people who have been to these fires who share their information from us. And I think Captain DeVito is one of those guys that just, man, he, in the industry, he's one of the go-to guys besides Chief Starnes about how to use these things. And he's got a lot of information that can help us, especially when it comes to short staffing on our fires and how to properly use these things to make us more successful. Go ahead, Nick.
I completely agree, Sean. I think that Joe is, you know, I've got the privilege of sitting in his class before, and he's jam up. He knows his stuff. What I really like about him is, you know, he's a blue collar suburban fireman, just like us. He's running the same type of fires that we're running. You know, he's running with that 3-man engine and that 2-man rescue or limited staffing situations, having to make the most out of that. So I think that's a really, really great first guest for us to bring on the show. I think he's very knowledgeable. He's very down to earth. And I think that he explains things so guys like me can understand, which I like. Definitely look forward to having him on.
Go ahead, Sean. Coming up next.
So in October, you know, we're going to have Chief Kurt Isaacson and Chief Shannon Stone. They're going to be discussing with us fire attack. And again, two amazing leaders in our industry, especially when it comes to these things and operating. And if anybody's heard a chance to hear Chief Isaacson talk, like, the area of the state that he works in is truly unique. Like, they have a significant amount of challenges. Man, he is very, very successful in what he does, and he's very aggressive with his tactics. And I think if there's anybody that can teach us how to be successful, it's probably Chief Isaacson. You know, he understands proper application of water. He's made several fire conferences in this state alone that encompass engine company operations, fire attack, and leadership style skills. And last year I had the opportunity to present with Chief Stone, and same thing, man, that guy's got some incredible experiences dealing with the staff levels he has. And those two together, man, they're incredible to tap into and just listen. And sometimes that's all we need, right? We just need to listen to who's talking and understand why it is they feel the way they do. And that it often is from their experiences that we may never be able to have. So it's as important to listen to people like that. So I know Nick reached out to them, so I'm going to let Nick kind of piggyback off of what I just said at his side of things.
Yeah, so, I'm Kurt and Shannon. I mean, both of those guys, you know, Shannon actually just retired from Walton Beach, which is in the county, next county over from where I'm at. He lives in our first due, and he works now as a district chief or division chief rather for the Midway Fire District, which is a department right next to ours that we run automatic aid with to fires and whatnot. You know, Shannon was one of those guys early in my career that I really looked up to, and he kind of, both those guys honestly have become very good mentors of mine and guys that I have personal knowledge and conversations with. I consider both of them my friend. And being blessed to have them, you know, both of them in my backyard, basically. They both live within 10 minutes of my house, which is nice. And obviously with the county fire tax conferences and things like that, and some of the stuff that Shannon's done with 850 firemen, both of those guys are fairly well known throughout the state and the country, and especially in the panhandle here, have heavy influence on my career and a lot of firemen that have cut their teeth here in the panhandle of Florida. So very, very knowledgeable suburban engine guys, two of the best guys I know. You know, when we're talking suburban fire attack, the first two guys that like popped in my head immediately were those two guys, because that really is something that they've really made it their point to specialize in, if you will. That, you know, very, very knowledgeable on water application. You know, Chief Isaacson talks about the gallons per second versus gallons per minute, you know, getting quick water, fast water, right? You know, the booster backup concept is something that we've been running up in our department and other departments in the panhandle for years now, where, you know, the second dude doesn't necessarily catch the hydrant. A lot of times we front load manpower and water, tank water, on the initial first two companies to kind of marry them up and make for successful fire attack, right? So we have heard that adage that as the first line goes, so goes the fire. So what we want to do, right, and that's something they preach and have preached for a while, is to take those companies with those limited resources a lot of times, right, let's give ourselves the best chance to win. Let's get the first line right. So that's what the, you know, some of the stuff we'll be talking with them in October. Like I said, really, really knowledgeable engine guys. Looking forward to having them on the show. That being said, I'm going to default back to Sean for November. Nick Ledeen is going to be talking search with us. Sean, this is up your alley, man. This is your forte, brother. So I'm going to let you take this one, man.
All right. So I reached out to Nick for a multitude of reasons. One, he's a friend of mine. We talk pretty frequently. But two, he's kind of one of the members that has a lot to do with our search surveys. He does a lot of work in getting that information out to us and making sure that we understand it. And the team that he's involved with Firefighter Rescue Survey is incredible. And, you know, being a searcher myself and teaching on that topic, and he's just been instrumental in a lot of the information that I've been able to put in with my real world experiences and tell people like why it is so important to understand this. You know, we can all read numbers and numbers are impressive and that's all great. But when you're talking about someone who truly understands what it is we do and why it is we're doing it and puts them first, especially, you know, in the search realm, I don't know anybody much better than Nick, honestly. And he's a pretty humble guy, so he might not agree with me there, but you know, you can see some of this stuff in Fire Engineering Magazine and, you know, obviously the Search Culture Facebook page, as well as Firefighter Rescue Survey Facebook page. And, you know, listening to him dissect this information and how he came up with these surveys, it really is a great tool for us to use. But with that, we have to understand that the information that we have is only being like gathered by those who submit the surveys. So I'm looking forward to him talking about his experiences. You know, he does the Grabs podcast as well. So, you know, he's very involved with the search world and kind of telling us how we can be better, you know, and why he came up with the questions he did on this survey. It's going to be a really good conversation with Nick, I think, so that people can understand the importance of we can't get better unless we fill these things out and we know where we're winning and where we're not winning. And, you know, when you look at 1,172 rescue surveys, man, I know for sure, and a lot of us know for sure, that there's probably a hell of a lot more rescues being made than that. So how do we get the capture for those? You know, we got to implement these things into our SOPs. Like, hey, if you're out of fire and you make a grab, it is the department's SOP that we fill out this survey and we submit it. And, you know, he's been working on a format for that to show to the fire departments and stuff like that. So hopefully they'll implement that. So I think it's going to be a really good conversation. A lot of knowledge that people may have heard or may not have heard.
Great. Great. Sounds very interesting. Anybody after that?
Yeah. So just on the search stuff, first of all, I just want to say like a quick note on that, Sean, you're a numbers guy. I like numbers. I really, you know, what I think it is what I like about it is we're gearing search training now to best practices because we have data that we can see where are the victims actually being found.
Absolutely. You know,
where are they being found? Where should we prioritize our search? Where should we really target our energies and our efforts? And how critical is that in the suburban setting with limited staffing to really get the most bang for your buck out of your search, right? To go to the place where you're going to win most likely. You know, we've seen stuff like this in sports for years where they, you know, in baseball, you have the shift, football, you have the audibles, and they set, you know, plays, they study their opponent, right? And then they play the numbers, the statistics of, you know, they run 30% to this side. They, you know, they run this play on third and long 40% of the time, right? So what do? They start gearing and making educated plans based on the data. And mm-hmm. I think that application has a huge implication in the fire service, particularly in the suburban setting where we have to make the most out of what we have. So that's awesome. I'm looking forward to that episode. December, we're going to segue into doing something a little different. We're going to talk about leadership, and we're having one of the, in my opinion, one of the best guys for the subject matter coming on the show, Deputy Chief Anthony Avillo. He's written his most recent book, Full Contact Leadership. I've had the privilege of having him, you know, listen to him speak on several occasions. He was our keynote speaker this last year at the North Florida Fire Expo, and really got to spend some time with him. And just really, he gets people. And, you know, that's something we forget about in fire service is, you know, it's one thing to manage, but it's a whole different thing to lead. And when you try to manage people, you don't usually get good results. And so, you know, one of the things I've been fortunate, you know, as a company officer, as a young company officer, I've had a couple conversations where I've been able just to sit down and on the phone and like, hey, chief, you know, what do you think about this? Bounce that kind of stuff off. And what, you know, this is why I'm really excited about having him on the show, because he does have a lot of experience. He's come up through the ranks all the way to the deputy chief level. And then he's stayed in the fire service, instructing and teaching and, you know, traveling. And so he's dealt with people on a lot of different levels, from small events to big events, small department, big department. And I think it's, when it comes to people, he gets people, and he gets how to talk to people. And he's very matter of fact. He doesn't beat around the bush. And that's something I respect about him, is he knows how to get his point across in a way that, you know, is clear, but at the same time, you know, getting people to do, and that what is leadership, right? So getting people to accomplish a common goal, not because you're forcing them to, but because they want to. And that's something that I think that really has been harped on a lot in the last couple of years in the fire service. But what our episode will be looking at is, okay, let's talk about, you know, that suburban, that smaller department status, where, you know, maybe you only got a couple guys underneath you as an officer, or, you know, maybe, you know, even leading from a line position, because, you know, a lot of small departments, it's not all chiefs that are making recommendations and decisions. You know, in my department, we're small, and the captains and lieutenants kind of take a joint role in some of these projects, from training to SOPs to just, you know, recruitment, all that stuff. So we have guys, even driver engineers and firefighters on some of these committees that in a big department may not be the case, right? So in a lot of your bigger departments, you know, the policymakers are pretty much at the top, whereas in suburban departments, it is smaller and people know each other and you have limited resources. So you see some of that sharing of leadership sometimes from the bottom. So I'm looking forward to that aspect of it, of talking about it, not about bugles, but about leadership from the bottom to the top.
Sure.
And talking about how we as suburban firefighters, you know, some of the unique challenges that we've encountered, you know, I think we've all been there in smaller departments where the chief may not be on scene for 10 minutes. Who's running the show? Or, you know, it may be that senior firefighter that's spearheading training, that's spearheading committee. And so I think there's a lot of stuff we can talk about on that. But Chief Avila is, like I said, one of the most knowledgeable guys, you know, just all around good guy, knowledgeable, down to earth. And I think he's going to be a really great asset to have on the show in December, and be a great way to kind of wrap up the 2020 year and kind of go in on a positive note.
That sounds terrific. And I know we have more in the pot that we're looking at with other topics that we feel are going to be most interesting, because they're going to all the topics that we have spoken about today and what we're planning is not to be like just simply going to a conference and listening to a lecturer. This Zoom environment gives us an opportunity, as Nick said earlier, to talk with these people like we're sitting around the kitchen table, and they don't have a podium in front of them with a microphone. That we're just sitting and talking, and they're sharing their knowledge and experience and wisdom with the rest of us, so that we can, it's up to us what we do with that information once we get it. And if you're a firefighter that listens to this show on a regular basis, and with the guests that I've been able to bring on, been lucky enough, thank goodness, to bring on over these past 4 years, this is now a segment that we are proud to present, because we want it to be a segment that any firefighter, whether you're the probie or you're the senior firefighter in the house, that you're going to not only find interesting, but you can have a takeaway from it. That's the key. Because if we can't give you a takeaway, then we're wasting our time. And so we've been working to get you, our listeners, the best people in these various topics of our field that we love, but there's always room for improvement. There's room for improvement in the podcast. I hear from close friends. There's room in everything we do in life. We have to be ready to say, I can do better a little bit. I can do a little bit better if I learn a little bit more. And as long as you have that open mind to say, I can learn a little bit more, this podcast, Make Do, is going to be for you.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely, Steve. I, you know, the only thing I concern, I'm a little hesitation concern about, you know, we talked about just doing the audio podcast or doing a video podcast. And, you know, I'm not sure if having our ugly mugs up here on the screen is going to hurt or help our ratings and get support here.
Well, the fact
we may have more success if they can't see us, but you know, whatever. Hey, they'll just have to endure. Maybe put a sticky note over my little screen here or something. I don't know.
Well, the great thing about Zoom is that it also drops me an audio file, so there will be a regular audio podcast that goes out for every episode that we do.
So if my makeup's not on point that day, we can
see
the audio file. I got you.
Yeah. Go on by yourself. It's a little compact to take off the shine. That's all.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I guess.
Sean, what'd you say?
I said it scares me that you guys know so much about makeup.
I mean,
that's what I'm curious about. I've been
producing in some form or another, even if it's been at my school, high school, since my days in high school is when I started in a TV studio my school had. And that's where I learned about lighting and why we use a little compact, because on television, Zoom isn't important, but when we do TV interviews, and even when we were shooting our original TV show, America's Heroes, the Men and Women of Fire Rescue, when we went back to do our interviews with our guests, I would carry a little compact in my video bag. And I would just put a little bit on, depending on how the light was hitting them. If it was daylight, it wasn't as bad. But nighttime phony lights, especially, we didn't have LEDs back then 20 years ago. So it would be a little shine. But nobody minded. They know what it's for. And it's a little bit of fun because they're nervous about an interview. So you give them put a little makeup on them and kind of, oh, wow, that's kind of, that was easy.
I'm just offended by this humidity right now, man.
Yeah,
it's pretty impressive.
Yeah,
it's definitely August.
This morning's weather said we're expecting a heat index of up to 109.
That's exciting.
Isn't that exciting, right? So, guys, as we wrap it up, what do you think? I mean, I think I'm really jazzed for this. I think we're bringing in great guests. I think we have more to, we have one, we know that we've already reached out to on a very serious topic for us to, again, need to learn more on. And how do you want to tie it up? Let's tie it up the bundle and make sure people are back in September to listen to Captain Joe DeVito.
Yeah, absolutely. So first I want to thank everybody for their time. You know, as we know, nobody has to sit and listen to these things. Nobody has to sign on and watch, but it takes a different kind of firefighter or even individual to want to do this and to understand that, hey, you know, whatever my position is in the fire service, there's probably things that I can learn from people or, you know, support what my mission is in the fire service. So I have to give credit to those people because without them, we're just talking to each other, which is fine, right? But when we talk about what our mission is, our mission is to leave it better than we found it, right? Our mission is to be better together. And in order to do that, we have to have conversations together and we have to be listening to people. And you know, if you don't agree, that's okay too. Like you can agree to disagree.
Right.
But the conversations that take place in the fire service tend to be one-sided, right? If you don't like what somebody has to say, you don't listen to it. You know, if it doesn't go right along with your values or what your vision is, you don't want to hear about it. And I think once we sit down and we start discussing these topics amongst each other and getting other people's input, people are going to find out that this isn't just Sean who feels this way or Steve or Nick. This is a thing amongst the fire service that a lot of firefighters feel. And for whatever reason, their voices are being quieted or maybe they're just nervous to come out and say it. But your opinion does matter, right? And if you are the type of person that wants to benefit the fire service, then I think what we're going to see in the next, you know, 10, 15 years, hopefully, is a fire service full of students' mindsets that realize that this isn't just a job. This isn't just, you know, a place you go to hang out every third day with the boys. Like, this is a very serious thing. And if you want to go home to your family, if you want the people you're with to go home to their families, if you want to try and make the greatest impact in your community, then it's time to listen and realize that, hey, we may not be doing this the best way that we can. So hopefully, like, if you don't want to listen to my views or yours or Nick's, hopefully somebody at some point will listen to our guests and spark something to make them realize we're maybe not as good as we think we are, and that's okay. But we have to start somewhere so that we can build upon that and get better. So that's really where it is. And it really does take all these people that view our podcasts and come out to these programs and stuff to make that happen, because without it, we're alone. And you know, we're just not going to make any impact if we don't have the right people with the right mindset backing that. So
very true.
That's really the thing. So
well said, Sean. Well said. Nick?
Yeah, I think Sean did a really good job of kind of wrapping it up there. My thoughts on it are just that, we're just a few firemen here, trying to give another avenue and a platform for guys that maybe, you know, in other settings have been afraid to raise their hand, ask questions, whatever, to bounce ideas when we don't have those ideal conditions, you know, when we're having to make do with less. And talk about that stuff. And, you know, and if what we have works for you, great. You know, hopefully some of our guests will bring some different ideas as well. And you know, that's the goal. I mean, the goal is to share knowledge, to share passion for this craft that we all love, you know, and hopefully, you know, inspire some guys to keep working hard, to keep training, to not get discouraged because, you know, they work in a small department. Maybe they don't go to a lot of fires or, you know, maybe they, you know, maybe they feel like stuff's never going to change because the environment that they're in, you know, the funding's not great or whatever. I mean, at the end of the day, we're all professionals, right? Sean, you said it earlier. Steve, you said it. Yeah. You know, we want to be better. And that's what this podcast is for. It's a platform for guys to get better, to improve, to share ideas. Check out our Facebook page, the Make Do Suburban Fireman Facebook page there. Shoot us a message on there as well. If you want to shoot us a message on Messenger on there, if you can't remember the email, by all means, just message us on Facebook. And we'd love to hear some feedback. We'd love to see, some guys getting on there, maybe sharing some ideas. You know, this is about you guys that are listening. This is about the listener. This is not about Nick Peppard or Sean Duff or Steve Green individually, right? We're just, all we're doing is facilitating conversation.
Exactly.
Facilitating ideas being shared, and giving guys, you know, another avenue to maybe let their voice be heard, to let their questions be asked, to, you know, feel comfortable. That's what we want. We want guys to come listen to the show, to watch the show, and to feel like they're sitting across from us at the table with a cup of coffee or a beer and just shooting the shit and just having a good time, talking shop, like, you know, and that's the environment that we're aiming for. That's I know that's my vision is, you know, I want guys to come out here, you know, our guests to feel comfortable. I want our listeners to feel like, you know, it's something they can just listen to and say, yeah, okay, I'm not alone, right? You know, my situation is not, while it's got its limits and its challenges, so does everybody else's position. And you know what? There's a guy that, you know, I'm riding a two-man engine. Hey, that guy rode a two-man engine. You know, what did he do in that situation, right? So, you know, take that stuff and share those that knowledge and those ideas. And, you know, hopefully they go back to the department. And that's the goal, right? Like Sean said, to leave it better than we found it.
Right.
They go back to their department. They take those ideas and they say, how can I make this work for me? And here's the thing. You know, I would consider this podcast series a huge success if we even just a handful of guys walked away with something that they could take back that made them better, or maybe that inspired them to keep working, to try, you know, to keep trying, to keep pushing for change. We know that change comes oftentimes slow and painful, right? In the fire service, especially if we're not in positions where we got the checkbooks to make those changes. So that being said, for everybody that's listening, thank you for your time. Thank you for giving up, you know, the 90 minutes or so that you've listened to us today. We hope that you'll continue to listen to us and be able to glean some good information, and that you'll be able to take it back to your firehouse, whatever corner of the fire service you're in, you know, and hopefully just be a change catalyst in your organization going forward.
Great. Well, we're going to let you know that the three of us will always put out on social media when the next episode is going to be coming out, because our recording is and interviews depend on the availability of our guests and my co-hosts here, because they still work shift work. So we have to make sure that they're available and a guest is available. We would be remiss as we close this show today if we don't give a shout out to our brothers and sisters on the front lines of the COVID fight. Whether you're in the big city or your small community and you're being hit hard with it, we know there's this real bad resurgence going on through the South, over to the West, to Southwest and into California, and up into California and Oregon and Washington and now up to in New England area and part of the central U.S. But you, our brothers and sisters, have been out there day in and day out working, doing whatever you can do to help the people in your community. And we salute you. And just keep up the great work. Stay safe and stay well. As I mentioned earlier, that this podcast will come out both as an audio podcast on all the major podcast platforms. And it'll be on our, it'll be posted on our channel on YouTube. The channel's name is 5 Alarm Task Force with a dash between 5 and Alarm. So 5 Alarm Task Force Corp, C-O-R-P, as that is the name of our new nonprofit company. We'll be telling you more about that in our next podcast from our show. We have some great guests coming up on the regular episodes of 5 Alarm Task Force as well. Coming up will be Dr. Graham Peasley as he talks about his research into the PFAS and PFOS in our bunker gear. And others coming up. Chief Charlie Werner will be back talking about new technological changes coming to for the fire service as well. So we have great guests coming back. We have a new series here with Make Do. We have a lot planned for season 5 of 5 Alarm Task Force and some surprises coming up as well. So thank you for listening. If you're watching the video is going to end here. Listening to the audio, there'll be a little bit more on the audio side of it as we close that up. And thank you. And as we always say, please stay safe and stay well. And let's make sure everyone goes home. We'll see you next time. Bye-bye.
You're listening to 5 Alarm Task Force.
Dear John, I'm leaving. Uncontrolled high blood pressure is serious, and I can quit whenever I want. Why can't we get back to when you checked on me? I don't want to leave, but remember, when I quit, you quit. Sincerely, your heart.
Listen to your heart. Don't let it quit on you. High blood pressure can lead to a stroke, heart attack, or death. Get yours to a healthy range today. Find out how at heart.org/bloodpressure. A message from the American Heart Association, the American Stroke Association, and the Ad Council.
This message is for you, the first responders, loyal listeners to 5 Alarm Task Force. We thank you for listening. We're glad you enjoy our guests and the information and experiences they share with us. We greatly appreciate your unwavering commitment to the people you protect, especially now as we work to combat the coronavirus in our communities. Even as some of the world's great minds are hard at work seeking a cure, treatment, or prevention, tens of thousands of citizens of our planet continue to suffer the effects of this terrible virus. As we've all seen, when COVID-19 strikes, the vast majority of these patients initially encounter one or more first responders. Despite the fact that restrictions imposed by local governments pertaining to staying home, closing, or limiting operations of numerous businesses are beginning to relax, it is still crucial that everyone continues to exercise good judgment and practices personal safety measures like hand washing and wearing a face mask. Please remember to take care of yourself when on duty or off. Do everything you can to protect yourself. Use all of your PPE. Treat every patient encounter as being positive for COVID-19. Regularly disinfect your equipment as well as your vehicle, particularly after patient contact. When you go home, take personal precautions like hand washing, showering, and changing clothes before you interact with family members in your household. The world's first responders truly are all in this together, and along with healthcare workers and other frontline personnel, continue to respond to this global pandemic. For this, we sincerely thank you. A message from 5 Alarm Task Force.
Hi, this is Steve again. If you heard the opening of the show, I began to give you a little bit of a preview of some of the changes that are forthcoming in this, our fifth season here at 5 Alarm Task Force. Previously to this this past spring, for the last four seasons, the podcast was just me. I did it. There was no company. I did what I could, and that was it. However, since then we have created a new certified IRS nonprofit corporation, and its main goal, truly, is to, number one, be the umbrella cover to the podcast, and number two, we created a secondary bank account called the foundation account. Our goal, when we do kick in with that, will be to solicit donations from private citizens and from businesses, etc., so that when we get a plea for a firefighter or other first responder in dire need, him or her or their family, we want to make a contribution to help them out. We're not going to go through the online money-making websites. This is ours. This is going to be from one group of first responders to another. We are a family. We have always looked at it this way here at Five Alarm Task Force. We always talk about fire, rescue, EMS, law enforcement. And of course, so sadly, because of the number of other first responders we've lost on roadway emergencies, our recovery operators, the tow truck drivers, our highway rangers, our safety rangers that are out on the roads every day. If you saw the news this week, the week of August 10th, you saw the other day that three North Carolina pieces of apparatus were hit by a semi that had drifted over to the right lane after they, all three pieces, had set up a proper blocking area. Hit the one at the end, pushed them so hard and so fast into the other two, three of them almost demolished. So we are a family. And while it was nice to talk about family on the previous seasons, a couple of us decided that we need more. We can't just talk about family. We have to do for family, because that's what families do. They help each other. We will, as I mentioned earlier, we will be having professional swag. I hate to use that word, but it's a quick word. T-shirts, caps, challenge coins, etc. be created. It's going to take your help for us to do it. We'll have to solicit gifts before we can do it. I've seeded both our operating account and our foundation account with enough funds so the bank is not going to take any, at this point, take any bank charges out of our accounts. We have a new PayPal account that we're going to be announcing soon that can take any credit card. Whether you have a PayPal account or not, you can use any credit card. We have a special discount rate so that PayPal takes less money out of your donation than they normally do for a commercial business. We have that set up already. And this is our goal. This year, we're covering many, many facets of this family, of who we are. And that's important because we're thrilled by the numbers that we see. At last count for last season, we were at 139 countries across six of the continents. I never dreamed of that. I never expected that. I was hoping for 10 or 25 firefighters listening to the show once in a while, and I was going to be a happy camper. I guess we've gone beyond that. But that's thanks to you, our listeners. And that's who this show is for. Whether you are an active firefighter, EMT paramedic, law enforcement officer, safety ranger, recovery operator, doctors, nurses, other medical staff, we're all family. We all share one goal: helping the people in our community. So, let's get ready. We have a great season coming, and the right time will come that we're going to start the foundation program, and we will help. It's who we are. It's what we do. Stay safe. and stay well.
Every year, over 1 million fires burn in America. Fortunately, firefighters are on the job, saving life and property, and you can be a part of it. 7 out of 10 firefighters and emergency responders are volunteers. There's no typical firefighter. Anyone can volunteer to serve their community. Volunteering as a first responder is really about having the heart and drive to make a difference where it's needed most. Your community needs you. Are you ready to answer the call? Learn more and find local volunteer opportunities at makemeafirefighter.org.
And that wraps this kickoff episode to Season 5 of Five Alarm Task Force. I'd like to thank my guests, Captain Nick Peppard and Sean Duffy, for joining us to discuss the launch of our new monthly segment, Make Do. Did you know you can now find us and subscribe to us on all the top podcast platforms? Just search for Five Alarm Task Force. We also want to thank our sponsors, Insight Training LLC and the Firehouse Tribune, as well as our promotional partners, Chief Miller Products and Sites, LifeScan Wellness Centers, Nesta Bars, the Firefighter Cancer Foundation, the Firefighter Cancer Support Network, the Albemarle Sweet Shop, the North Florida Fire Expo, and the Great Florida Fire School. If you would like to be a guest with us or have a suggestion for a show, please drop us a line to dalmatprod@outlook.com. You can follow us on Twitter @dalmatprod, on Instagram @dalmation_productions, on Facebook @dalmatprodfire, and on YouTube. Please subscribe to our channel, Five Alarm Task Force Corp. Stay up to date with all the news about our podcasts, our new nonprofit foundation, and our blog on our website, www.dalmationproductions.tv. I'm Steve Green. Until next time, stay safe, stay well, and let's make sure everyone goes home.